This is Irredeemable, stories about Michigan juvenile lifers from Interlochen Public Radio.
I think literally I just got out of control.
I just wanted to be alone. I just dealt with him on my own.
Sometimes when we do things that wreck our own lives.
I don't know what happened to him.
A warning, part of today's story contains graphic violence and is not suitable for kids. Juvenile lifers are people convicted of murder as teenagers and sent to die in prison. In 2016, the U.S. Supreme Court ordered states to review these sentences. Michigan has begun resentencing all these prisoners, something the state's attorney general opposed. He said revisiting these cases would cause trauma to the family members of victims. James Fuson is a family member of two murder victims, but he's also the killer. IPR's Morgan Springer has his story.
It was really James Fuson's grandparents who raised him. Dolores and Wallace Bach were their names, but he called them Granny and Pee-wee. James lived with his grandparents and his aunt in Detroit. Here's his aunt, Penny Johnson.
I was 8 years older than him, and I remember, you know, I used to babysit him a lot, and I would change his diapers, and he was like my little brother, you know.
Penny says James was very likable, charismatic, and smart.
God, he's so smart, just so smart. Like, everybody had a special place in their heart for him because he didn't have a mom and a dad, you know. It's like we were his family, so we showered him with love.
James's mom had died and his dad had left after that. James and Penny got older. He sought her out for advice. Penny helped him learn to drive. But all along, James was getting more and more angry and rebellious. He stopped listening to his grandparents.
They tried really hard to rein me in. And I just kept the older I got, the more and more I just did whatever I wanted.
That's James speaking from prison at Macomb Correctional Facility downstate.
I just got out of control.
By 18, James had dropped out of school, run away from home, and moved in with his girlfriend, Retta Huggins. He had violated parole for an aggravated assault charge and decided he'd move to North Carolina with Retta and their friend Steve Hansen so he could avoid going to jail. James says before they left, they went to his grandparents' house to pick up his stuff.
We had discussed even before then if they tried to stop us, we weren't going to let them if we had to.
And did that mean killing them?
If it had to. I remember it came up, and I was like, whatever it takes.
They went into the house in the early morning hours of January 24th, 1994. James's key to the house didn't work, so he broke through the window and went in with Retta and Steve. His grandparents confronted them.
And they were yelling and screaming, and I was yelling and screaming back. And after this, I'll do what I want. I'm leaving. You're never going to see me again, that type of stuff. And
the yelling turned physical between James and his grandmother.
And she had hit me, and I hit her back.
James says his grandmother fell down. Nearby, Retta and Steve were attacking his grandfather.
It's hard to remember a little bit of it, but I just kept on hitting her, and she just had stopped moving, and I thought I had killed her right there.
He stopped hitting his grandmother, thinking she was dead.
And she wasn't. She was breathing real heavy, and I remember I hated that. I didn't like to hear it. So I had went into the kitchen and grabbed a knife, and then I cut his throat. And then I left her there.
His grandmother was dead. His grandfather was dead, too. Retta had beaten his head with a teapot, and Steve had cut his throat. James's Aunt Penny was 25 when it happened. She lived about 10 minutes away with her husband.
I would never have thought he would have done something like that. Like, they loved him. He loved them. We all loved each other. I had never expected it. No.
Did you go to the trial?
Yes, I did. I went to the pretrials. I went to everything.
And did you ever talk to him after it had happened?
No. Nope.
Yeah.
He slipped someone a note to give to me after the sentencing. And I threw it away.
Without reading it?
No, I read it. And it said that he loved me and then that he didn't do this. I'm like, well, who did it then? If you didn't do it, who did it? Because I know you did it. I was just, I threw it away. But that's the only contact we've had.
The jury found James guilty of both his grandparents' murders. And at 19, he was sentenced to life with no chance at parole. The sentence was mandatory under state law. James's girlfriend, Retta, was also sentenced to die in prison. Steve got a shorter sentence and has already been paroled. James can't explain why he did it. Yes, he was angry. He was rebellious. He says he was self-centered, that he probably had psychological problems.
Really, I think I started a long time before that with my parents.
His Aunt Penny says when James was born, his dad was in prison for assault and robbery.
And I don't think he liked his dad.
My dad was abusive.
James says his dad beat his mom, and he beat him too. Penny says James's mom was trying to save money to get away from his dad.
And he told her that if she left him, he would kill the entire family, he would rape me, and burn us. He was just an evil man.
James's mom died from a heroin and cocaine overdose. He was 7 years old. His dad disappeared after that and later went to prison for murder where he died. From then on, James lived at his grandparents' house full-time in southwest Detroit.
You know, my mom and dad did everything they could to show him love and that they cared about him and try to change his life. You know, I just don't understand why he did that. I just don't. He took out anger on the people that loved him the most.
Do you think that will ever make sense?
Never.
Yeah. Does that make it harder?
Yes.
Nothing really changed when James went to prison. Early on, he got in trouble for fighting, and he beat up another prisoner, punching him in the head repeatedly. That landed him in solitary confinement for 6 months.
And a guy whose name I don't know, he was in the cell next to me, and he said that, he asked me, what's wrong with you, kids today? And I said, I'm doing a life bit. I don't give enough. And he said, well, you don't know when things can change. Maybe you should do your bit like, you have an out date, and maybe one day you will get that chance.
Things really changed for James after a friend pressured him into joining a theater class. He says he had so much fun, it kind of just snowballed from there. He took other classes, started writing poetry, and playing the guitar. Now, it's been 20 years since he's gotten a misconduct ticket for violence in prison. James uses a Bible verse to describe what's happened to him over time. Be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind. But he still struggles to come to terms with what he did to his grandparents nearly 24 years ago. He says he rarely talks about it.
The shame and the guilt and all that, I think that's my biggest roadblock to really putting it out there. That I had betrayed them in such a way, and I feel horrible, like what must have went through their minds.
James is 41 years old, and the advice from the older prisoner to do his bit like he has an out date may pay off. In 2012, the U.S. Supreme Court said it's unconstitutional to give juveniles who commit first-degree murder a mandatory sentence of life without parole. In 2016, Michigan began resentencing its juvenile lifers, including James. At resentencing, prisoners can get life without parole again. They can also get a minimum sentence of 25 years. The final decision is up to a judge or jury. But last year, prosecutors from around the state were asked to make a recommendation in each case. In cases where the prosecutor recommends a shorter sentence, the juvenile lifer will most likely get out. Robert Moran works for the Wayne County prosecutor. He says input from victims' family members influences the county's decision.
It's part of the process. It's a factor that we consider. It's not the only factor.
He says the prosecutor also considers things like the circumstances of the crime, the lifer's prison record, and psychological reports. Their job is to represent the people of Michigan, including the victim's family members. But, he says, that doesn't mean they always side with the family.
I can tell you there are cases where they wanted life without parole, and we went the other way.
Moran says his office has tried to reach as many family members of victims as it can to try to tell them about the resentencing process.
And to try to explain to them that what we told them years ago is no longer true, and that these individuals may have a possibility of getting a parole date.
James's aunt, Penny Johnson, says she hasn't heard from the prosecutor's office yet. She found out about the resentencing process about a year ago on her own.
I cried because it brought back memories. And, you know, I pulled out old articles and the autopsy report and confessions and pretty much kind of tortured myself.
James's resentencing hearing hasn't been rescheduled yet, but he has thought about what he'd like to say to family if they're there when it does happen.
I just want them to know how sorry I am for what I did to everyone. How ashamed I am of it. Nothing I can do can ever change it. Take it back. And that I love all of them. No matter what.
I imagine, like, as you think of your resentencing date, there's probably a certain amount of anticipation and excitement and hope. Is there also fear?
The obvious fear I have is that I walk away with a lot of time. The real fears, I think, is with finding out that people in my family don't forgive me. They might not want me out, and they might say as much, which, you know, I think they're justified in that feeling and that desire, and I wouldn't be ever mad at them for that.
James's cousin Rick Kimbrough does feel that way. He was in his 20s when his aunt and uncle were murdered. He says James should never get out.
I wish they had a death penalty. I think he should have been, he shouldn't be living for what he did. I mean, that was told two innocent people just brutally murdered like that. I mean, brutal.
When I ask Penny if she thinks James should stay in prison for life or get a shorter sentence, she says she doesn't know.
I still love him, but I'm afraid of him because I don't know what kind of person he is. Like, what he has shown me, he's evil. I just hope that he is different, but I don't know.
The Wayne County prosecutor has weighed in, recommending James get resentenced to life without parole again. James has a picture of his grandparents in his cell at Macomb. Sometimes he'll take it out to look at them. Penny watches old videos of her parents. Her favorite is of a backyard barbecue, a small family gathering.
And we were playing Aerosmith. And my dad was playing guitar. And my cousin was dancing while he was flipping burgers. And my mom was dancing with me. And James wasn't in that video. But, like, he was probably in his bedroom or something, but I wish he was more of a part of it.
James remembers his grandmother crocheting her blue Buick and how she was always doing things for other people. He thinks of his grandfather's sense of humor and his antics. Do you miss them?
Oh, yeah.
What do you miss?
Just them. They're,
are their love. They're always being there. No matter what I was doing, if I was acting out or having troubles in school, they would always be there for me and show up and, you know, support me. I think maybe people might think I don't have a right to feel that loss. I do feel it. You know, I'm human. I'm gonna feel that. You know, I might be the instrument of my own bad feelings, but I feel them nonetheless. I love them, despite what had happened. You know, sometimes we do things that wreck our own lives.
In prison, James has been asked multiple times to present his story to a class on justice, and he's turned them down every single time. He says he's not ready to talk about it. This year, though, they've asked him again, and although he hasn't given them an answer yet, he says he's considering it. For Interlochen Public Radio, I'm Morgan Springer.